right, we are back once again on the T-Talk podcast brought to you by Flagstick.com. Weather is turning, it's getting colder, fall golf is almost coming to an end, but I'm sitting down in the studio with my co-host, Scott McLeod. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to maybe another week of golf for me, but that's probably going to be it. I don't know about you. Or, I mean, your sticks away now or what?
No, they're never away. I mean, I think preparing for travel season at this point. You never know, this weekend could be nice and we could make some things happen that way, but you know, it's getting chilly. We talked about it on the podcast the other day about playing in 5 degrees Celsius weather. I definitely did that over the last week. I didn't hate it. I think, as I said, it's all about the wind, man. If the wind's not there, things are good. But one place they didn't have to worry about wind and cold was this past weekend. They had Tiger Woods was playing in that Skins game, looking all right. The Zozo Championship wrapped up. Justin Thomas looking really good. So I take is he the best closer in golf?
I don't know about that.
Pretty early anyways, to tell on that. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I mean, I saw some comparisons too. They were discussing whether, you know, Justin Thomas is better than Jordan Spieth now. I saw someone, you know, trying to talk about
right
that
now,
a little
yeah,
bit.
Sure.
Right now, yes, forever. But I mean, they've still got 11 wins, you know.
Spieth's got a few more majors.
Spieth's got a few more majors, so I don't think we can judge that. And I mean, it's like anything, you know, they're just trying to have something to talk about. So, you know, yeah, it's great. He played well. He got that win in the bag. And then, you know, the tour is over in Asia and going to keep that run going. And yeah, it's nice to see Tiger teeing it up in Japan as well.
Yeah, we'll talk about Tiger and his game and what we think about it heading into the potential captain's pick later in the podcast. But yeah, the Skins game, I unfortunately did not see it because it was on at who knows when in the middle of the night. How much of the Skins game did you check out? Nice to see Jason Day playing well again.
Yeah, not much. And I think that was the way for Canada as well. Golf Channel was carrying it around the world, or at least for the U.S., sorry. So it didn't carry over to this side. Golf TV was taking care of it here. So not everybody signed in to give it a watch. And generally, like you said, it was in the middle of the night as well. I caught a lot of the highlights later. That's really kind of my interest. I wasn't sure what was going to happen with it. It wasn't, you know, big amounts of money that they were playing for versus maybe some of the Skins games and things in the past, but you know, they had some fun shots in there. I saw Jason Day, you know, make that 6-iron shot out of the bunker. I don't know if you caught that, but that was kind of neat to see. And you know, he ended up in the win, or with the win in the end, winning 17th and the 18th hole to cut $210,000 for 8 Skins. Tiger picked up 5. Rory got 4, so they picked up $60,000 each, and Hideki Matsuyama came up in the last 1 Skin for him and $20,000, which I was kind of surprised because he had played well over the weekend, but that's the nature of Skins games.
$20,000 isn't bad for a day on the golf course.
No, it's not bad.
For those guys, like, yeah, Tiger's probably pissed. He doesn't get off the couch for $60,000.
Yeah, and as we know, as we talked about, you know, this was really a good way to get those players over there so that they were ready to play the Zozo Championship. And, you know, whatever the case may be, it got them out there, and it was nice to see even Tiger playing a little bit of a Skins game. And that's his record now, too. He's finished second on that one. He's never won a Skins game, which is kind of remarkable when you think about it.
He's never been a great match play player either. Like, he doesn't really win.
I would argue that.
I mean, there's stats out there that they say he is. I mean the last time somebody
as an amateur, he was outstanding.
Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a long time ago. Right.
I mean, Stephen Ames learned the hard way on that one, so maybe I'll learn the hard way on that. He'll probably win the WGC match play this year, and I'll be putting, you know, shoving this back down my throat when I edit the future podcast with that. But as I said, Justin Thomas wins. I think the biggest story coming out of that week with that whole tournament was Brooks Koepka's comments about the rivalry with Rory McIlroy and it not being a rivalry because he hasn't won any majors since he's been out on tour. Rory came out at some point today saying something along the lines of, He's right.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't. And I think he just had some fun. He's like, I didn't need a reminder from him that I hadn't won any majors. What are your thoughts on Brooks? It just felt, I mean, you get asked the question. That's the thing about Brooks that you love and some people sometimes hate, but that's what you get out of him is this idea of he'll answer whatever question you give him. So if you give him a question, is there a rivalry between you and Rory? He'll give you an honest answer.
I didn't have any issue with it. I mean, it was just like Rory said. I mean, he didn't really have an issue with it as well. I mean, he didn't want the reminder, sure, but, you know, Brooks wasn't saying anything that wasn't true. So, you know, that's just the way it is. And if you don't feel it's a rivalry, then that's what he said. I mean, if everybody else wants to think it is, and kind of make it up, and you know, it makes for good media and a little clickbait or whatever. You know, that's what they're doing. It's not really the reality of it. And really, if you talk to players and see how they see things, they have lots of other things to worry about than to worry about rivalries and discussion on social media about, you know, who's better and whatever. They're not really paying attention to this stuff. So, I mean, it's just, it's not their priority one. They have a job to do.
I just don't, golf isn't a sport where you can really have a rivalry. I mean, obviously in the past there was things like Sergio and Tiger disliked each other. I always felt like the Phil and Tiger one was a little bit made up in a sense. I mean, what's the last good rivalry in golf where you can't wait for them to get paired up? Like, it must be Tiger and Phil, but even then, it always felt fake to me.
Yeah, it you know, you got a player that's maybe not quite the same standard. The thing is, they're not always playing in the same event. Sometimes they are, but even then, you know, there's a lot of other players that are there. So it's not really head to head. This is not the way the sport is. It's not tennis where you
it's
see
not
a
happy
lot...
and Shooter McGavin fighting out there.
No, not at all. You're not seeing the one-on-ones like I mentioned in tennis that, you know, back and forth. And it seems a little bit more when you see that, whether it's, you know, Nadal Federer or that type of thing, where they're going head to head a lot of times. We don't see that in golf. It's just not what it is. And I think it's, like you said, it's a little bit manufactured, whether that's fan manufactured, media manufactured, agent manufactured, whatever the case may be, to draw attention.
Got to find some way to fill up 24 hours of round-the-clock golf coverage on the Golf Channel. Another couple things coming out of the weekend. I listened to an interview today with Graham DeLette. He sounds good. He's on the Jay and Dan podcast, actually doing some promotion for his charity, but just kind of chatting about how he feels coming out of the last 2 weeks. He's feeling good, so looking for Graham to get back out there this year full-time. And then there's a new scholarship was recently announced. Why don't you break that down for Canadian golf?
Yeah, the Maple Leaf Junior Tour, which is a, you know, a junior tour that's based in Vancouver, but has sections across the country. I mean, they announced a scholarship in the name of Jacob Lugli. It's a Jacob Lugli Memorial Scholarship, and the first winner is Eric Strick. He's a 17-year-old from Winnipeg. And why this scholarship is important is Jacob Lugli unfortunately lost his life with his dad in a car accident earlier this summer in July. They were on their way. He's from Dryden, Ontario. He and his dad. His dad was a high school principal. They were on their way to a golf tournament. Unfortunately, it was, you know, it was a Maple Leaf Junior Tour event, and a vehicle, I guess, stopped up early, tried to avoid another vehicle, swerved around it, and unfortunately hit them head on, and the two of them lost their lives. So the Maple Leaf Junior Tour has decided to have this scholarship in his honor, and really it's going to annually go to a junior from Manitoba who's developing as a champion in both golf and life, showing leadership and community service. And I think it's nice of them to be doing that, to recognize this young man who is a talented golfer, talented hockey player as well. His dad, I read a lot of material on this after the award was out. I hadn't really heard the story much, but you know, it's a really sad thing, and it's nice to see that people will maybe look and see for his name when this scholarship is handed out each year, and then understand maybe that, you know, golf is good to a lot of people, but, you know, there's bad things that happen in the world as well. And, you know, hopefully that they can remember what this kid did and what he did in his short 17 years, and his father as well, and what they did and made an impact on everyone else. And if people can, you know, if they're golfing, they can sort of follow his steps of being, you know, a nice young man. I think that's just a nice way to honor him.
Couldn't say anything better than that. That's a perfect way to describe that. And it's always nice to see these junior tours doing the right thing and making that golf experience great for juniors, getting that tournament experience. And an unfortunate event turned into a positive, which is awesome. You saw a very unfortunate event on the golf course on the weekend. Can you give me a quick breakdown? I don't even know how to break down. I mean, it's definitely a lighter story in a sense. What did you see? Because that's ridiculous.
Safety is always something we talk about in golf a lot of times, especially for myself as a PGA professional. I mean, PGA of Canada professionals, we carry $5 million in liability insurance. And a lot of that is just to cover, you know, things that can happen. And you see clubs, which are very painful to get hit by, if anybody's hit themselves in the ankle or done anything that way, it's very easy for someone to accidentally get struck by a club. club if you're not paying attention, or, you know, it can be a combination of two things. So I was playing the scramble at Cataraqui this past weekend, and it just so happened that the other team was getting ready to tee off, and I happened to be looking the other way, and I just heard this sound. It sounded like a ball hitting a cart path, but it was a weird noise. And I turned around and I saw the one player that had been getting ready to tee up on this very long par three. He was hitting a three wood. I saw all of a sudden his wood was on the ground and he was looking towards his right. And then his teammate was standing there holding his jaw, blood spurting from his chin. And I was like, what is going on here? And apparently the one teammate, the one who was bleeding, got a little bit close. And then the other player had sort of backed up, took the backswing, smoked him right in the chin. I will say, after, you know, still bleeding a bit, the hard part was older gentleman on blood thinner, so he was bleeding a good bit. He did make a 20-footer for birdie on that hole, which is incredible. Proceeded to, on the next tee, understand that he had actually chipped one of his teeth, and he actually was holding part of a tooth in his hand, and so I had to get some ice, and, you know, he ended up gutting it out for the whole round, even though he was bleeding
a little bit.
Did you
start on the back nine?
No, we actually had... We did. We started on 13.
So he had a lot of holes.
He had a lot of holes to go. But it's just a reminder, everybody, from a safety standpoint, make sure there's room around you and really be aware of where you're at so that you're not, you know, in the path of someone's backswing. And yeah, it was kind of horrific to see, really.
I mean, you said he was an older gentleman. This isn't the first time he's been on the golf course. Like, there's got to be awareness. Who's at fault in your mind here?
I think this was a two-way one.
I disagree. I wasn't there, but...
Yeah, you know what? The guy taking the practice swing didn't really look behind or to see where he was.
But do you do that every time? Like, do a full, like, 360?
I generally do. I always kind of look around to make sure there's kind of room behind me.
You've seen it all now.
And I think the other mistake, and probably you're right, the larger mistake was made by the other gentleman, the fact that he was behind his playing partner, and that's always a bad spot to be. You're in the blind side there, and he certainly didn't deserve it, but it was kind of different to see, and I can't say I've seen some injuries on the golf course before.
Yeah,
but I hadn't seen that one before. Have you got or seen anything like that?
I mean, I haven't seen. I mean, there's been close calls. I've been hit by golf balls a couple times. I may have told this story in the podcast before. I was standing on the green of a hole that was, you know, running, you know, parallel to the another hole, and standing on the green about to take a putt, and had a one hopper straight to my nether regions.
Oh, hello.
No four, nothing yet. So that happened. I mean, again, that's on that. I'm not at fault. I can tell
you
that.
No, of course not. Yeah.
That four. You see what I mean? I want him to yell four. So that's obviously happened. Injuries happen, but, like, you know, I think that's the biggest thing is just, it doesn't matter. Just scream for. I think there's an old quote. Yeah, you don't yell for. You scream for because you want to be safe. In that case, though, with the club, I mean,
yes, it was it was avoidable. Let's just say it was kind of shocking in the fact that, yeah, like I said, we had started on 13, so we'd come around on two. So yeah, he played more than nine holes, basically holding a towel full of ice. Luckily, we're close enough to the clubhouse; he could go up and get some ice. But yeah, he had blood all over his windshield. Old hockey player, so he was good with it. He was a pretty tough guy, and I mean, you know, other guys were joking around and said, man, I don't know how he even was standing. I mean, I would have been lying on the ground. I said, yeah, I would have been calling my mommy by the next tee. I mean, it was a pretty sick sounding noise, and a nice little ping three wood right to the jaw. Not so fun.
Quick ad for them. Just a nice ping logo on the cross of his chin.
There you go.
It's too bad. Hope he makes a full recovery.
I'm sure he will.
I think it's time to head over to our interview this week. We haven't even mentioned this. We've been telling a lot of people stories on the podcast of golf professionals, whether they've been in their, you know, playing for forever, just getting into it, trying to find their path as a professional. So who do we have this week, Scott?
Yeah, we've got Cooper Brown on, which is a young man who grew up in Renfrew, living in Peterborough, Ontario now. And, you know, he's making his way just after a couple years of playing professional golf, went to college. He is, you know, he's had some success. He's also had some struggles as well. And he was really great about coming on and really laying that out for us, which I think is really important for people, you know, not so much as a cautionary tale, but to understand that, you know, it's not always an easy road. And there's a lot of things that are involved with turning professional and playing professional. And, you know, there's no path that's the same for each player. And he certainly was nice enough to share his with us. All right, we want to welcome in Cooper Brown. Cooper grew up in Renfrew, Ontario. I'm familiar with him as a junior golfer, and then he has emerged as a golf professional. He will tell you a little bit about his journey, his successes, maybe about his failures, and his struggles as well playing professional golf. Welcome to the podcast, Cooper Brown.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
So, Cooper, for people that don't really know you or haven't heard of you, and we'll get to your successes in a bit, because you certainly have had some successes of late and did have some as well in college and amateur golf. But why don't you give people a little synopsis of, you know, how you grew up, where you grew up, and how you got involved with golf?
Yeah, absolutely. So my father was the professional at Dragonfly Golf Links, and I pretty much grew up at the golf course, came at first, I think it was a cheap way of babysitting, and then after a while, it was couldn't get me away from the golf course. I just fell in love with it right away. So I grew up pretty much going to work with Dad at 6 a.m., 7:30, anywhere in that time range, and being there till 9 o'clock at night. So that's how I got into it. And then growing up, I started playing competitively around the age of 8. And then around the age of 13, I started really feeling like, this is what I wanted. I wanted to play golf in college, so I started taking it even more seriously. And then as I started doing that, won some tournaments as a junior, a couple city and districts, city and district match play at the junior, not the men's level. Played in some junior Ontario's at that time. Actually, growing up, we were in Quebec for a while, so I played some Quebec juniors and then Canadian juniors. And my junior resume got me to actually get to go to Wallace State Community College, which was in Hanceville, Alabama, and that's kind of where when I got there, believe it or not, I never played outside of Canada, so I didn't know how my game would stack up against people across America, and that's kind of when I learned that I could actually do this for a living. I could become something.
When you go to school, everybody has that first initial shock of living away from home. And now you're not only living away from home, you're living away from Canada. And you're also not going to New York or Pennsylvania. You're going to Alabama, right?
It was a massive culture shock. I mean, it was just it seemed like the polar opposite of anything that I'd seen in my life. And it's like people didn't drink coffee, like just simple things like that. People drank Mountain Dew in the morning. It was just like, man, what's going on in this part of the world? And people taking me to go get barbecue and stuff like that, and I'd never even heard of it. And just, we have chicken and steak for breakfast. It's like, what? Like, so stuff like, it took me a little while to adjust to that for sure. And I definitely gained, freshman team would have been generous.
And you're a big guy too, so you got into that a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, man, this is country fried steak, it's all right.
And I think a lot of that comes, you know, maybe I'm putting words into your mouth and you can touch on this, but a lot of people that they go through that, they get down there, their body is physically changing, they're on this whole other lifestyle that they're not used to. You're living in a place that, you know, the culture is different from everything you've seen, and it's going to affect your golf game. Now you come home in the summer and everyone expects you to have, you know, the best year, considering you probably went in super hot. So what was that like for you? I assume it wasn't the greatest start to the college career.
So at first it was, I got off to actually a pretty good start. Our first ever team qualifier, I went out and shot, I think, 6 under or something like that. And that's when, and I was a walk-on, and coach was like, okay, I got this. That's after that day, my coach started working with me a little bit more. So I did get off to a pretty good start. I had a little bit of a lull in the middle of that season, and I think that had something probably to do with being a little homesick, missing mom and dad, having, I mean, McDonald's burgers were a dollar. It wasn't really
good. I was going to say, learning how to swing around your barrel.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So there's definitely some changes there. I mean, you get used to and being in high school, coming home and dinner being ready. And I mean, high school, virtually, you have 1 hour of homework at the most. And now you're getting done school. You're going to practice for 5 hours and you're doing homework after. And then you have to take care of dinner yourself. So you're learning how to do all that stuff by yourself, especially being 25 hours away from home. And yeah, it was definitely, there was a middle at the first, I think I played well off the start because I was just so excited to be there. And then the kind of that middle part of the season where like the dog days, as the cliche goes, it was kind of like, man, this is a lot. So yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit too about, you know, a choice of going to a junior college? It's not something, you know, a lot of people really think about, but I know from, you know, my own experience of talking to lots of players, and I know some that are from, you know, the Ottawa region and in the area that you're from, that made a decision, be it, you know, Lee Currie, Grace St. Germain. There's other players that started out at junior colleges and then decided to make a transfer. But, you know, what is that experience like as far as you making the choice of doing that? And does it, you know, does it even feel or appear different?
Well, for me, out of high school, I had a couple Division II opportunities. I thought, in my head, I thought, I'm a Division I player. I don't want to be at a Division II school for 4 years. I think I'm better than that. And also, the offers were pretty low, and they financially, the junior college route just made more sense. But also, the big thing for me was, if I go to a Division II or Division I might not necessarily play every single tournament right out of high school. Whereas I was told by the coach, he kind of said, you will get playing time here. Like, there's no doubt, looking at your scores and looking at you hit it, like, you will get playing time. So that was a big thing for me, was we've all gone through a period where you take 3 months away from competitive golf and you go back into it and you don't have your tournament feels. Well, this made sure that I was consistently playing tournaments every other week. So that was the big part for me, was just making sure that you played all the time.
And you eventually ended up at a Division I school, transferring to Augusta University, famously where Patrick Reed played at one point of time. What went into that decision, and what was the biggest change then from there? Now you're going from Alabama, you're heading over to Georgia now as well. Life keeps on changing for you, Cooper.
Yeah, just kept ticking along. So my freshman year, I was fortunate enough, I won the NJCAA national championship, and then some different, I had a few more schools knocking at the door after that than out of high school, for sure. So I visited at West Virginia, and I was planning on visiting at a few more schools, but then I got a call from Augusta, and so I went over there for a visit, and I just was blown away with the facility there. The coach is still, like, he was a great guy in that visit, and I love my 2 years with Coach O'Keefe. What basically boiled down to making my decision to go there was, I'm sitting in his office, and he goes, how would you like the opportunity to play Augusta National? And I said, well, where do I sign?
How do they not have the best team every year?
I don't. It's quite the recruiting strategy.
Like, hey, so here's our plan. You can come here. You might never play, but you get to go to Augusta National at least once. We'll take you there. Yeah, okay, I'll sign.
Yeah, exactly. Right now the team is a little bit down right now, but my last year we had five seniors, so kind of in that rebuilding period. But yeah, no, they that facility and that program is, I would recommend it if you can get in there. Jump at that opportunity. I love my 2 years there. I consider Augusta home.
So let's talk about it then, because obviously everyone's going to want to know. We've had a couple people on the podcast that have played it. We've had people that have walked it. But, you know, as a Canadian, I think it's almost different. It seems even more unrealistic to ever think you'll ever get to play there. So just walk us through the first time pulling up to Magnolia Lane and that first round of golf?
Okay, so about I'll take you about a day, 2 days before, Coach said we're playing, I think it was a Monday morning, Coach said on Wednesday you guys don't have to go to class, we're playing Augusta National. Okay. One, don't have to go
double bonus,
no class, and playing the greatest golf course known to man. Perfect. And he says you need to bring two sets of ID. Bring your driver's license and your passport. Because I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, they pretty much treat it like you're entering another country when you're playing there. Like, they want to make sure that you are you. That someone isn't trying to sneak one past or anything like that. So, two sets of ID, and we're driving up, and they have this gate on Magnolia Lane, and they're pillars that come out of the ground. And a guy on my team went, I bet you those go down into the ground, and we all laughed, and then all of a sudden they just went down into the ground. And it was hilarious. We're like, man, we are entering another world here. So we're driving down Magnolia Lane, and we get parked about 10 feet from the clubhouse. Three or four caddies come up, grab our clubs out of the back, and they just said, go into the clubhouse and change your shoes, get ready for the round. So we go in, change our shoes, and then they bring us into, so that we go from the locker room, we go into the clubhouse, and the three gentlemen that got us out there that day, they said, all right, we're gonna have something to eat. And we're sitting there, and I'm looking at the menu, and the menu's like chicken fingers and fries, burgers, BLT, and like, I didn't know what to expect, what was going to be on the menu, but it definitely wasn't that. And I was expecting, I don't know, like prime rib or something really fancy. And I just looked at Mr. Evans, who was one of our biggest boosters, and said, Mr. Evans, this isn't the menu I was expecting. He goes, we like to eat what we like to eat, son. Like, this is, it doesn't matter where you
that's
go
awesome.
In the world. Golf course food is golf course food. Like,
that's so a fact.
It was awesome. It was just like everyone, no one felt like it was above them. Like, you just felt like you were at another country club. It didn't feel like I need to be prim and proper or anything like that. So that was really cool. And then went out to the range, and all, like, there was seven of us there that day, and seven caddies come up, stand up behind us, washing our clubs and all that. And then we head over to the first tee, and it was, I never realized how hard the first hole was. You're watching it on TV, guys bomb it over that right bunker, but we're playing in January, and that bunker's just perfect landing area, and I hit driver 4-iron.
Wow.
Like, man, this is...
A 4-iron into that green. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it wasn't the easiest start, but it was funny. Actually, a guy on our team was... He hooked one onto 9 fairway and then hit it over the trees and made about a 70-footer from the right side of the green to the left, made birdie. And then he par 2, birdie 3, and we're standing on 4-tee. And one of our caddies goes, oh, so you're going for the course record today, Vic. And he blocked one so far right before. He's like, dude, I was so nervous once he said that.
That is awesome.
I mean, we're like the 70 of you sitting there, you know, trying to, you know, have bets among each other who was going to go lowest, or, you know, what was the deal with that? Or you're just, you know, all nervous and you're just going to go out and play.
Just pretty well go out and play the first year. But my second year there, we were doing qualifying, and I was trying to qualify for the fifth spot. I was trying to sneak in the lineup, and there was talks that Coach was going to use my round as a qualifying round.
you got to qualify at Augusta National. Oh, yeah, no big deal.
And it was funny because he was like, yeah, you're playing with me today. So I'm like, oh, my God, like, this is a qualifying round. So I was the first time I was out there, I shot 79 and enjoyed every minute. Where the second time, I still enjoyed my day, but I was grinding. I was like, man, I need to shoot a score. So it was kind of cool it kind of felt like a tournament situation playing at Augusta National, which is just unbelievable, but it's really cool. And the best part about my experience there was we got to play when there's absolutely no grandstands. So when you're standing on one tee with no grandstands and no gallery, you can see 12.
Wow. All the way to the bottom. Wow.
All the way to the bottom. All the way.
That is cool.
You can see the entire golf course.
That is so cool. I think I saw that on Tiger Woods 12 or something like that, but not the same.
So you're standing on, you can see it, then you go up the hill on one, and then you come back down it on two, and you can see 13 fairway perfectly. Like, the entire round, you can pretty well see some part of Amen Corner the entire day.
That's pretty cool.
Like, you're, it's like they're taunting you the whole time, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the front nine, I think the front nine doesn't get quite enough credit for how good those holes are. 4 through 6 is one of the toughest stretch of holes I've ever played. Just unbelievable. And then it was so, but the cool thing, when you get through 9 holes there, they set up a bar cart, actually, in between 9 green and 10 and 10 tee. And they serve a drink called Transfusions, and that's...
Are you going to disappear for telling us all this? Or
no, no. This is... everyone in Augusta knows this type of stuff.
All right.
As far off of an idea it is for us to play it, everyone who's a good golfer or has any sort of business in that town has been there.
Gotcha.
It's like,
I'm moving.
I was thinking right away.
Yeah. But so there's a bar cart set up between the 9th and 10th tee, and they have a drink called a transfusion, and it's Welch's grape juice and ginger ale. And they call those transfusions. And, one of the members we're playing with, he goes, yeah, and if you guys weren't with the school, we'd add some vodka and make it a confusion.
Nice.
So that's the club drink out there. So
nice.
Pretty cool. Just a lot of cool things that I got to be a part of. And that day was unbelievable. And I hit 13 and 2 both times I played.
Okay. Not a big deal.
In that time of year, the first year I hit driver 3-iron, second year I hit driver 2-iron. And I was the only guy who reached both years. Like, from, we got, to, it's a little bit longer when we play it, but it's tougher in that way. But then the ball doesn't get away from you on the greens and stuff like that. So, but I would say it plays probably a stroke or two tougher when we played it. So when I shot 75 my second year, and I was pretty happy with that.
So at what point during your career then, you know, you're going to school and you know you're going to graduate, when do you start thinking, you know, am I going to get a regular job or am I going to make golf my job?
Yeah, so my second year, my first year at Augusta, I didn't play much. I think I played 4 tournaments for the year, and I didn't play well in any of them. I couldn't get myself into a rhythm. And then my second year, I played more regularly, and it was the... Tavistock Invitational, which is at Isleworth, that I came 12th in, and I beat like Dylan Meyer, who's played on tour. I beat Sam Horsfield, who was the number 1 amateur in the world. I beat a couple other really, really good players, and that's when I went, if I'm beating these guys now, that there's no reason why I can't beat them at the next level. So that's kind of when it kind of flipped on me that, okay, you have a serious chance of doing that. And ever since then, I was like, okay, I'm going to play professional golf. I don't want to have a regular job. This is what I want to do. So from that moment, I remember after finishing that tournament, I went, okay, you're an actual player.
So you go from Augusta University, playing Augusta National, you turn pro. Now you're playing on the Great Lakes Tour, not playing courses like Augusta National anymore.
No.
Grinding it out on pro-ams over the last year. Just a lot been going on. Mackenzie Tour, Q School at one point. I assume at this point you're realizing this is not as easy as I thought it was going to be. Yeah, I was able to beat some of those guys.
Yeah.
But I'm not able to beat a lot of these other guys.
No, exactly. I mean, you become a pro golfer and you find out there are good players everywhere. Like, guys you've never heard of, guys who are didn't go anywhere in school but have figured it out now. Like, just there's good players everywhere you go, no matter what. And the struggle, like, last year was I hadn't learned how to learn a golf course in a day, I found. So, like, now I find I can play a golf course once and then chart my way through it the next day right away. But my first year, it was felt like, how are these guys playing a practice round and then going out and shooting 6 under the next day? I don't, like, I have to play a golf course 3 or 4 times. That was like what I found was like, man, these guys, it doesn't matter where they play. They know they shoot 6 under, 8 under, 10 under, like they just, boom, it happens. So that's what I found the biggest adjustment was just in college. If you break par for a tournament, you're probably going to finish top 10 in a lot of scenarios. And then obviously the winners of a lot of college events are 10, 11, 12 under. But if you shoot under par, you're gonna finish well. I remember last year I played at the Canada Cup in Victoriaville, and I was 4 under for the tournament. I came 54th, and I'm just like, what? Like, I played well this week, and like similar story, same tournament this year. I went out on the first day. I shot even par, and the lead was at 9 under. And I went, okay. Fell a little bit farther behind than I want to, but good day tomorrow, and I'll make the cut and try to move my way up solidly up the leaderboard. Well, I went out and shot 7 under in the morning, and I came in and I was 12 behind. I shot 7 under and lost 5 shots. Because there was a guy who went out and shot 60.
I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, and I'm just like,
what does that do to you mentally though? Because I mean, obviously you're going out there and shooting 7 under. You're playing some golf, but
yeah,
you know, it's hard to keep yourself in it and go, okay, I'm still a good player, but I'm getting waxed here.
Like that day, I think I had the third or fourth lowest round of the day. So it was in my head, I was going, okay, like obviously this guy got hot, and at the same time I missed 5 putts inside 8 feet to shoot, and I still shot 65. So it was out there, so it didn't, but at the same point, it's like, could have anyone else shot 60 that I didn't actually lose ground today? But that's, you learn that you're not necessarily trying to win every week. I mean, you are, but at the same point, it's like, okay, this guy's hot, I might not catch him, but what can I do in order to make a better check this week? Like, I think everyone has to have that reality check every week where it goes, okay, winning's out, but what can I do to make sure that I play my best? So, and I've learned that over, I felt like I played a lot of tournaments this summer, and I found I adjusted throughout the round of what I needed to do a lot better than I did last year. Played a couple, like I had a tournament earlier this year where I was, I think I was 8th or 9th going in the last round. And it was windy, really, really windy. And through 6 holes, I was 6 over par. I made a quad on my 6th hole. And all of a sudden, they have live
scoring. Stefan can relate.
Yeah, exactly. I pull up my live scoring.
Ricochet over there. I don't know what I did.
I pull up the live score, and I'm like, man, I'm out of the money. I'm way out. And but it just went, okay. But to start the day, I would have told myself, I'm going to shoot. Before the day started, I told myself I was going to shoot 6 under, 7 under. Like, that's what you want. Well, why can't I shoot 6 under on these last 12 holes? So, just, I think that's just a development of a golfer. You see guys do it on tour. It's like Kevin Na this past week. He makes a triple, but he makes that immediate adjustment. Like, I call it pace, performance after critical error. And if you can do that, then I think that's a massive, massive advantage where some people can't rebound, but that's what you got to do. You can't control what anyone else is doing. You just try to control what you're doing and the task at hand. So that's been a big difference maker for me.
So what's the plan from here? Obviously, the Great Lakes Tour is a great start into the professional career. And
yeah.
I would assume that's not the end game by any stretch of the imagination.
Absolutely not.
2020, obviously, you got probably a little bit of a break here. But what's the plan going forward?
I am doing Q school again. I'll do McKenzie for the 3rd year now. Last year, I missed conditional by 2 shots, which only thing conditional really does for you is knock down Monday qualifying
fees
money. It, yeah. Fees, exactly. It goes from 400 to 100. So At least that's something. But
that's nice.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm going to give that another shot. I shot 82 in my first round and still only missed conditional by two. So the last three rounds, I was, I believe, top 15 the last three rounds. So I got caught in a monsoon and played bad.
So do you think it's just a matter of time for you? I mean, it's all these experiences that you've had in the last couple of years that you think will, you know, propel you forward?
I really do. I think it is. My last tournament I played, I won. And that was, I had Jim Kineski, who is part owner of the Great Lakes Tour, come to me and goes, if you're winning the tour championship and on a golf course like this, he goes, there's no reason why you shouldn't be on the McKenzie Tour right now. He goes, if you're winning on this level, like, there's no reason why you can't make the jump. So hearing it from a guy who's seen, he was a good player himself at my age, and he's seen millions of golfers come through his tour and make it. And for him to say that then really makes me feel like if I keep working on the things that I am, and then I don't see why it isn't just a matter of time. I really don't.
Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you coming on and tell us a little bit about your story. Maybe that will help a little people get behind you from a support perspective. Do you want to share with us maybe a little bit? You got a social media, you got a website that maybe people can go and give you a follow?
Yeah, you can follow all my results basically on my Instagram page, which is at CoopBrown9. I will post swing videos, stuff like that, just updates on where I'm playing next. I normally post my scorecard after every round, or just follow my mother and she'll just give you my entire life. So yeah, just Instagram is what I'm probably most active on. Also, yeah, probably Twitter as well. If you want some hot takes on, it's just the same handle at CoopBrown9. I'm normally pretty vocal on there. I think it's a good thing for people to speak their opinion if it's not going to offend anybody too much. So yeah, those are the two platforms that I use the most. I don't use Facebook at all really anymore, but yeah, Instagram and Twitter at CoopBrown9.
All right, well, we really appreciate it. Thanks and best of luck as you go ahead and get set to play on the McKenzie Tour as far as to play the qualifying school. Thanks, Cooper. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Cooper Brown, for that interview. What a great interview. This guy's got, if he doesn't make it as a golfer, he's got a great career in media. This smooth talker, great storyteller. His stories about Augusta National, you know, I was picturing everything he was saying. I picture it perfectly. Good story, and we're obviously cheering for him, just like every other pro that's been on this podcast.
Yeah, nice young man, and it's been nice to see him from junior golf all the way to professionals, and we'll be following his story.
Absolutely. The next part we're about to go into is a little bit of a heavier story coming out of Saskatchewan, and the golf family is a small family that we like to take care of one another. So unfortunately, there was a passing in the golf family recently. Allie Jenkins out of Saskatchewan died on Sunday of complications during the birth of her third child. She was a competitive and provincial curling, and she was also a very active golfer as a junior, and her husband, Scott, was also a very active competitor. Just a sad, sad story all around. Luckily, the golf community is coming together. We have started a GoFundMe. Sorry, I said we. I am not we, but as a community has started the GoFundMe, where you can actually search the Jenkins family GoFundMe, where they are raising money to help them in her honor. Obviously, it's going to be a super tough path for her husband and her family going forward. But if you have any ability to donate anything, I know everybody in that community and that family would appreciate it. It's a super tough story, but as I said, we try to stick together in the golf industry.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, it's nice to see there's been over 1,400 donors so far. They've raised well over $100,000, looking to raise $250,000. And, you know, it's a support that, especially in the Prairie provinces, people really come together. Having lived just even 1 year in Saskatchewan, I just know how the community is there and the community of Warman. And, you know, curling community, golf community, very tight-knit. And if anybody can support this family and help them out, we'd certainly like to see that.
Absolutely. If you're wondering where you can donate, as I mentioned, you can search Jenkins Family on GoFundMe. You can also go to the Flagstick Twitter account. Scott has retweeted that page. Thank you for taking your time to listen to that. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with our new segment, Birdie or Bogey. All right, folks, we're back with the Birdie or Bogey segment. We're going to go over some things that happened over the last week, give our take on whether we like it with a birdie or, you know, we hate it with a bogey. You know, three-putt bogey, we disliked it. So a lot of little things coming out of the golf world this week. And we're going to start with Rory McIlroy announcing he actually will play the Olympics this time around. I mean, he sounded pretty sure. I'm going to say he's playing it. He hasn't, I don't think he announced for which country yet. So that will be. Oh, he did.
Yes, he did. That was part of the controversy.
All right, let's hear it.
He said he's playing for Ireland. He's saying, I'm playing for who I'd normally play for.
That's awesome.
So there you go.
So, birdie or bogey?
A birdie for sure. I mean, you know, I get it. A lot of people look at it and being from Northern Ireland, part of the UK. But, you know, Ireland is who he said he's played for. He's played for in amateur golf. And if he plays in the Olympics, he will play for Ireland.
It's a birdie for me knowing that. I didn't know that until right now, obviously. And it's a birdie because that is such a hard decision for somebody from Northern Ireland
Very
to
much.
Make and take a stand officially.
Yeah.
It's obviously probably waned on him. 8 years, I'm going to say. Because if we talk about it for 4 years prior to the Olympics and then 4 years after. So that is huge. He's probably hated right now in Northern Ireland or, you know, maybe things are better there. But that absolute birdie, I love that.
Perfect.
This next one is we're back on the PGA Tour changing their stance on suspensions and actually announcing them a little bit more out loud. Matt Every is yet again suspended for violating the drugs of abuse policy. He was tested positive for cannabis that he says he was prescribed for a mental health condition by his doctor in Florida. He knew about the policy, knowingly violated it. What are your thoughts? Is this a birdie or is this a bogey?
Depends on the perspective we're coming from or whatever, but you know what? It's a bogey by Matt Every, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I get it. I totally understand, you know, where the stance is now regarding use of marijuana, but, you know, 37 states, I believe, now have made it legal, but this is federally regulated. This is not really the case, but this is not really what it's about. It's about the WADA policy, and it's not about whether it's performance enhancing or not. That's the discussion a lot of people tend to take it, and they say, you know, well, it's not performance enhancing. That's not really the point. There's a lot of drugs that are in there in the WADA policy that are not performance enhancing that are said to be illegal for a particular reason. So I understand by his perspective that, you know, he's not, as he said, by his doctor, he's not eligible for a certain class of drugs that will help him out for what he's, you know, been prescribed for or what he needs it for. But unfortunately, he's playing the tour and he signed up to the tour. And, you know, there's the rules are there and he knowingly violated it. This was not his first suspension from the tour. And so I think, does the policy have to change? Yeah, they have to look at it, but they also changed the policy previously. WADA changed the they changed the testing amount for THC that was mandated before to allow for certain levels. But basically, you know, that's enough allowance that, you know, he could apply for a therapeutic use exemption. Therapeutic use exemptions exist. They're in there. He could apply for that. There's no word whether he applied for that or not.
That's true.
So there is, as we've talked about before, there's a lot of different angles to this. So this makes it difficult to say birdie or bogey, but I'm just saying, you know, from Matt Every standpoint, it's a little bit of a bogey just because, you know, he knows what he signed up for. And unfortunately, while we don't always like the rules, if we're going to participate in something, sometimes we have to abide by them.
I agree with you on that sense, but if we're going by his standpoint, I'm going with a birdie on it. And the reason why is I think he's going with, I know I'm getting caught here and I'm taking a stand. And maybe he's not the name to do it. You know, obviously, if Tiger Woods does this and gets caught, I bet you, and he comes out and says, you know, I'm taking a stand. This is a joke. These are old rules. Something changes, right? Matt Every doesn't have that name appeal. It's not going to change overnight, but he clearly knew what he was doing. I wouldn't be surprised if he does it again. He maybe takes a break from the tour because clearly I think your mental health is more important than
for sure. Than there's no doubt about that. Yeah.
So I give him a birdie for it. I think from the tour perspective, it's a bogey. And the reason why, same when we talked about Robert Garrigues, if this was Tiger Woods, would he be his name out in the media? That's what I always question, because in the past, you know, you and I are in the industry. We know guys that have been suspended on the tour for drug use, and their names haven't been dropped out there. There's another story that gets made up. So I think there's both ways. It's a complicated situation that I think does need to be reviewed.
The tour had made it known a little while ago that, you know, they were going to start making these things public. So yep. The other side of it, too, is that, you know, he's got an opportunity, like I said, for the therapeutic use exemption. And if he's taking a stand, then why didn't he self-report? You know, if he's not self-reporting, if it's a case of him getting caught, then, you know, there's other ways to look at it. Again, it's such a complicated story, and that's why, you know, it's good here for discussion. Difficult to, you know, put it one way or the other as far as a birdie or a bogey because of different perspectives or things here. It will continue to be an evolving story, especially as far as, you know, the rules around cannabis are definitely changing. WADA, as I said, they have changed their policy a little bit. So basically, I guess from what I know, the policy basically takes into account THC counts high enough so that a person could have used, you know, the day before or a couple of days before and still pass through. They just don't want players or athletes actively using the day of. Whether that's necessary for his mental health situation or not, we don't know. So that's hard to say that way. But yeah, it's a complicated story. I don't think it's an easy one. I think that's a difficult thing as well, is that when we start talking about things like social media where people are having discussions about this, and even this is not a large enough forum to get to every piece of it, but people are debating it back and forth in 280 characters. And that's a really, really hard way to have a discussion about this, which is a complicated topic.
We could do an hour on this.
Of course we could. Thing. Yeah, for sure.
I think, you know, talking about progress, the biggest progression will be when the first major sports league comes out and they've changed their stance fully on it. The NHL is pretty much doing that without actually coming out. But that's, another hour.
100%. And maybe that's something we do sometime. Maybe we have somebody, you know, related to WADA come on and talk about that, and related to golf. That. So we could look at that for a future show.
Let's do it. Geez, I keep dropping everything around here, making noise. Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
He's got a big decision to make in a couple weeks. Picking him, let's say he picks himself for the President's Cup. Is this a birdie or is this a bogey for you?
I think it's a birdie for me. I mean, despite the fact that he only played 12 events last year, you know, as we've talked about previously, and you know, the President's Cup, largely irrelevant in most cases. It's pretty much an exhibition. And I think for the fans of the game, they'd love to see him playing down there in Melbourne. I mean, I know myself, just from a watching standpoint, it would be great to see. I think it's a birdie. It doesn't really hurt anyone except for maybe the golfer that would not get picked in that place. But anybody else, it's going to be good for.
He could lose every single match he plays in, and they're going to win.
Pretty much.
So it's a birdie. the benefits outweigh. You got young guys out there that you don't want to get together with, potential Ryder Cup and, you know, next year. So it's a birdie. He's going to pick himself. If he doesn't, I will be absolutely shocked. And if he does, he'll probably win everything because I said he wasn't going to match play. So.
There you go.
Next one. You said there's you had a little bit of an issue. Mandatory golf carts or something? What's going on here?
No, not so much of an issue. There's just always been some discussions about some different golf courses. People are talking about a couple different ones in Florida. I saw somebody had a beef with one because they went to it. And, you know, they basically said, you know, it's mandatory. And that person said, well, I want to walk. And the person said, well, no, you have to take a cart. He's like, well, I'll pay for a cart. But they're like, no, you have to take a cart. So birdie or bogey for you? I mean, mandatory carts. I mean, do you go to a golf course and they tell you to, you know, you have to take a golf cart? Love it.
Yeah, no, I've been to many that have, that's been the case. The only way I give it, it's a bogey regardless for me. But it does make sense on certain golf courses. So there's golf courses, if I'm trying to think of, you know, is Glen Abbey that has that like massive walk in between two holes, right? Where if you have two guys in carts behind you and now you're walking for 20 minutes between a hole,
that's
might
a,
be
different
a little
story.
Bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I've played golf courses where it probably would be a 20 minute walk between two holes because you're driving the cart for 10 minutes. That's a poor design. That's a bogey there. But I think it's a bogey regardless. If somebody wants to walk and they're going to pay you for the cart, just let them do it. And if people need to play through, they'll play through.
Yeah, if it's not impeding play. I mean, you mentioned golf courses. I played a Jerry Matthews design called Elk Ridge in northern Michigan where, you know, the golf course covers about 600 acres. So it's half mile between, you know, holes and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I can see it being an issue there.
A car.
Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, if a person wants to kind of play at their own pace and let the other players play through, I mean, what's wrong with that? I mean, some of the best places to go to walk, I mean, if I look at Highlands Links in Cape Breton, they've got one hole there where you go for a long walk along the river between holes, and it's one of the best things in golf. So I'd like to have the option to walk. If I have to pay and, you know, let players play through, that's fine by me too. I'm not in a hurry as far as to play the round of golf, but I get why they're doing it. If it's strictly about revenue, then, you know, pay the revenue, but don't make everybody, you know, get in a cart and you know.
So it's a bogey. Yeah, absolutely. This one I assume maybe came out of your weekend. Juniors
no.
playing in adult golf events. Nope. Didn't come out of the weekend. What are your thoughts on
there's
that?
There's a tweet online, a discussion about a Golf Monthly did a little quick story about it, but there was a club in England. It was a ladies event, and the ladies event was trying to prevent juniors from playing in the women's event. Now it's been turned around because apparently Ping Europe is involved with the golf club as an operator in some way. I didn't get all the details of that, and they basically made it known that you know, it's not going to happen. They're going to have to make sure that the juniors are allowed to, you know, play in any age events as long as they're obviously skilled enough to do it. So I think this amounts. I've had it when I was young too. I mean, I had people that had an issue when I played in club championships. One of the first club championships that I ever won, I won as a junior, and you know, there was some discussion whether I should have been allowed to play in the men's championship. And I made it known to them that it was a club championship. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a men's championship. It was a club championship. And although it sort of rankled them a little bit, then that's just the way it was. So for me, it's a bogey. I mean, we want to be welcoming to the largest segment of the population that we can, the growing segment of golfers that are out there. So I think in allowing juniors to play in adult club events, you know, with, again, we're going to have some caveats of regarding, you know, categories or things like that. But if it's an open event for a club and it just happens to be adults, I don't see what the problem is as far as having juniors in there if they're skilled enough or whatever to play in it.
I agree with you. Those are huge events for juniors, especially the good juniors that potentially want to play, you know, later in bigger tournaments as they grow or maybe they're going to college, right? The main reason, though, isn't that. It's that you're an adult. Your feelings don't get hurt over a child, a potential child.
Apparently they do.
Well, if they do, you have bigger issues and maybe leave the golf course, because the junior playing in it has more positives for the junior than the junior playing in it has negatives for you. And if you can't see that, that's on you. There's great therapists in England and there's great therapists here that can talk to you about that. But no, absolute bogey. You know, if a 6-year-old wants to play in a men's tournament, I don't care. Play the same tees. I don't care. It's up to you. You're going to learn a lesson probably, but it's, I agree. Open event means open. Sticking to the honors on the tee box, bogey or birdie for you? You've been going first for a while. I'll give you a break.
Yeah, recent round, so you know, that sort of came up, but you give it a whirl.
That's bogey. I don't care. Ready golf, whoever's ready. 100%. The only time I'll give birdie, the only time is if you had a birdie or an eagle, you go first. And even then, I said to people, I don't care. I had a birdie, you go play for it. And to the point that the guys on tour talk about this. Mm-hmm. They'll do it all the time.
Oh, 100%.
Like, you know, we were playing, and when Chapel was shooting 59 that day, they were even joking about asking him because they were ready up there. Obviously, they didn't. That was a different story.
Right.
But during our weekend, did guys go out of order? Absolutely. It doesn't matter. Ready golf. If you want to stick to the honors, you are a bogey if that's you. So, bogey.
Yeah, it's a bogey for me too. I mean, I don't really care. I mean, I get it. You know, you if a player, you know, they made a great shot and you know, they want to get their honors for the tee box. And but for me personally, I don't care. I mean, I get up all the time and then people say, "Oh, you got you're closer to the tee box. You're ready to go."
Yep.
Just go ahead. That's it doesn't really matter.
So the next one here you had on there, nine-hole golf course. Is there a story behind this?
Yeah, George Papar had a story in Lynx magazine, an article, and a few people were talking about it and the fact that there was a little bit of a dismissive tone in it. He was talking about golf courses in Iceland and then made a remark about it, but only some of those courses are, you know, they're only nine-hole golf courses. And it was kind of a dismissive remark regarding nine-hole golf courses. So I thought that was an interesting topic to maybe get your birdie or bogey on.
This one's tough because I don't like nine-hole golf. I won't search a nine-hole golf course, but I don't hate a nine-hole golf course. So it's very hard for me to say it's a win for nine holes, but I am going to... I think I'm changing my stance on them because of the speed of nine-hole golf. So I'm actually switching them over to birdie. A great nine-hole design is better than a bad 18-hole design. And a lot of the times they try to stuff 18 in where a good nine-hole golf course would be.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all know those courses that we play where, oh, the front nine's way better than the back nine, right? We do it anyway. So... I got to go with a birdie. I wish there were more great nine-hole golf courses around that I have played. I can't say I've played that many, but if we talk about, we've had guys on that travel experts on that they talk about the nine-hole golf course at Bandon Dunes being one of their favorite golf courses on the planet.
Winter Park in Florida. I love that place.
Winter Park in Florida. Bell Park in Kingston.
It doesn't exist anymore.
But you know, what I mean? Like, but I think that they're birdie. I don't think they're a bogey, clearly. So I have to go with birdie. I just wish they were more. We had more of them in this area.
It's a definite birdie for me. And I mean, part of that for me is the fact that I grew up playing nine-hole golf courses. And nine-hole golf courses have a true place in the game. And as people are finding out right now, the pace of play can be difficult for some. So it was very easy to be able to go out and play nine holes, you know, and not to think, oh, I've got to play 18. It's going to be 4 hours, whatever. You know, hour and a half, 2 hours, you're done nine holes. Nine-hole courses can alternate tees where you can play 18 holes and, you know, you're playing the same green sites, but you're playing from different angles and the holes will definitely play differently. I think they have a huge role in the game and you see them, especially in Canada as well, you see them in the rural areas. I mean, we mentioned, you know, about Saskatchewan and, you know, Saskatchewan, if you go through the province, you'll see they have a lot of nine-hole golf courses, a lot of small hamlets and villages. Nine-hole golf course, a rink, you know, a grain elevator. And, you know, those are three key features to a town. And you'll find out very quickly that it's not about how many holes you play. It's about enjoying the game. It's the community around it. And if you want to play 18, just play it twice.
Yeah, I think that's where the only thing is I don't like playing it twice. I find anytime I've done that, I just find out I've checked out in the last nine. And I think that's more... probably more me than anything, let's be honest. I'm a bogey. As we mentioned off the top, autumn golf, fall golf is coming to an end. You played in a scramble. Tell me you didn't see this. Carrying a leaf blower at a fall scramble, did this actually happen?
We actually had a gentleman come up to us, somebody we knew, and was talking to us on the practice screen beforehand, and someone joked about, you know, a leaf blower, and he's like, yeah, I've got a leaf blower. I carry one on my cart when I play in the scrambles. And we're like, what?
Is that legal?
It is legal, actually. If you look it up, you're allowed to, you know, remove debris and move it out of the way with anything that's available. So I looked into it, and there's actually a case of a couple more people that I've heard of that are actually carrying leaf blowers, especially in the fall. And you know what? Here wasn't a bad thing to be near that group because, you know, as I look into, you know, ahead and I've got another scramble to play and a golf course has a lot of leaves on it, I'm really hoping I'm near that person because they're going to have blown away the leaves on the green. And as he also said, you know, do you want me up there swatting away with a towel for 20 minutes or do you want me blowing it with the leaf blower in like 30 seconds and I'm out of there? And you know what? That's a good point.
So what is it?
Oh, it's a birdie for me. I think it's brilliant. I mean,
it's genius.
Yeah, it is genius. And, you know,
especially if you're taking a golf cart Yeah, right? Like well, around this time of the year, I mean, maybe you are walking, but if you're taking a golf cart, throw in the basket. This is a birdie. I never thought about this until I saw it on here. And I thought, oh, that's a hardo move. But now that you're talking about it, I love it. And that I got to find the charger for mine. Mine's been out of batteries for a few weeks. I asked you for yours, and you offered a rake. So that's not going to help you find your ball with a rake. But yeah, no, my leaf blower, if I play this weekend, it's coming with me.
There you
we
go.
Had some issues in the last round of golf, so it's absolutely coming with you. Which comes into our last birdie or bogey segment. Fall golf is the best golf. A statement many people are claiming right now. Is this a birdie or bogey for you? I'm going to go first on this one. It's a bogey. I disagree. It's not the best golf. It's pretty. But let's be honest, the golf course isn't in the best condition. There's a lot of soggy times right now, at least the golf courses I'm playing, a little bit wet. I prefer not to play when it's 5 degrees out and windy. I'm going a nice summer day. I'd rather be out there in shorts where it's not too hot. It's a bogey for me. I disagree.
Birdie for me. I like sweater golf. I don't mind that as far as the fall. Generally, I find a lot of golf courses, especially in their green complexes, will be in better shape this time of year, especially if they aerate early, maybe early in September. They've healed. They're not afraid to cut the golf course down as far as the green speeds are concerned, whereas in the summertime, some of the golf courses try to protect it a little bit. They try to keep the length of the blade up a little bit higher. So you tend to find some smoother conditions that way. Not blazing sun, not horrific. I was playing nine with my daughter, and she agreed with me as well. She thinks it's a birdie. She loves to play fall golf, and she said, you know, it's not super hot. It's nice to walk in. Yeah, visually, of course, it's attractive that way. The only bogey side of it with the fact that you know the season is ending.
Yeah, the leaves are tough, but now that I got this tip with the leaf
you're
blower,
all good with the blower.
You know, I almost want to go backwards. I think what I'm thinking of is fall golf of what it's right now in Canada, where it's like in the low singles, mid singles.
Yeah, let's
10,
talk
12
early
degrees.
Fall golf.
That is the best. It's when you got that two layers is fine. Maybe a thin third layer. When you have four layers on, it's so hard.
Yeah, no.
So, I still don't know. I don't know if I would take it over like a nice summer day.
That's fair.
So I'm gonna stick with it being a bogey, just the statement. That was birdie or bogey. We're gonna come back with the mailbag, the tip of the week, and wrap up this episode.
It's the mailbag. It's the mailbag where we answer your mail from our mailbag.
What do you think of that?
I think that's horrific.
Wow. All right. Well, the mailbag is here. We'll, pending on if we're going to continue with that intro tune. Scotty, what questions do we have this week?
I have a question of whether you've sang in your life or not. Is that my starter for the mailbag?
Hey, by the time this comes out, auto-tune will be all over. It'll be perfect.
All right, that sounds good. First thing first, it was great to have a lot of mail came in very quickly when I put the call out, which was nice to see. Obviously, there was just a Skins game in Japan. I had the person ask, if there was a women's Skins game, what four players would you like to see take part? So I know that's sudden for you, but, you know, if you gave it some thought, you know, what four would you choose?
Wow. Okay. This one's interesting. I'm drawing a blank on her name. Let me think.
Okay,
if
well,
this is
go at it.
If this is her name, tell me if I'm right. Was it Joanne Carner that?
Yeah, Joanne Carner with the cigarette in her mouth all the time.
Okay, so I thought so. Okay, I got Joanne Carner out there with the cigarette just for the entertainment.
Carner.
Yeah, just for the entertainment
of
it. Okay, so she's out there.
Yeah.
We got to go. Brooke. Brooke's got to be out there.
Of course. Yeah.
Okay, we got Brooke.
Well, you do yours and I'll do mine.
Okay.
How's that?
So we got Joanne Carner. We got Brooke Henderson. Let's go with...
it's not easy, is it?
No.
You only get four, so...
Let's go with Michelle Wee.
She's retired, but anyway.
She's... Joanne Carner's active?
She's... Sure.
She's still holding her card? Okay. which, you know what, I got to get in this story. I'm reading this quote right now from Joanne Carter. I tried to quit smoking three times. The first time I quit, I was playing a tournament at Industry Hills in California. I shot 45 on the front nine. I told my caddy, I assumed, to go get her a pack of cigarettes. So this is hilarious. Yeah, so maybe her twice. No. So I got Joanne, I got Brooke, I got Michelle Wee, and then I want I'm trying to think, just somebody way off the board here. I guess they got to play on tour. We'll give a shout out to Angel Yin, just because this girl hits bombs. She does. There's my four. And now I'm going into a deep dive at Joanne Carter while you tell me about your four.
You go do that. Brooke Henderson, of course. I mean, you've got to take Brooke. And really the thing here is, you know, you're trying to find players that are, you know, aggressive as well. I mean, a skins game is all about being aggressive and winning skins. So I think that's pretty important. I'll take Brooke. Angel Yin, just like you said, she hits bombs. So perfect for a skins game. Obviously, you can get the golf ball out there a long way. Danielle Kang, who just won. I'm going to take Danielle as well because very entertaining. Loves to walk in putts. So she's good that way and fun to watch. And I think I'll make my fourth Aria Jutanagarn, who also can really bomb the ball as well. Of course, she has to have a driver in her bag, which she normally doesn't, but it'd be nice to see in her bag, and she can putt as well. So I think that would be my foursome for a women's skins game.
So no Big Mama? That was an official nickname of Carner back.
Yeah, Joanne Carner would be awesome. I guess if we brought out a Legends section for the skins game, we'll have to think about that. Maybe we'll have to talk about that next week, and we'll pick out four players from the past and make it a women's Legends skins game. But I bet you that would be entertaining too.
All right. What's our next question in the mailbag this week?
All right. Someone asked, why would I play a hybrid over a five wood? And I guess this is probably having to do with Callaway came out with a new super hybrid this week, which is a larger hybrid. And they talk about having the power of a fairway wood in a hybrid. So someone is sort of asking, okay, why would I play a hybrid over a five wood? So do you want me to tackle that one?
Yeah, you can go first.
All right. So basically from a fitting perspective, and, you know, I did lots of fits over the years and obviously was a retailer as well. But for most people, what they'll find is a couple of differences here between a hybrid and a five wood. Generally in a hybrid, you're going to get a shorter shaft. So for some people, it's easier for them to make contact in the center of the face. Hybrid as well, the center of gravity is a little bit closer to the face, a little bit more iron-like. So the trajectory is a little bit lower, although it is easier to hit than a long iron. Over a five wood, some people would choose a five wood, and I won't say why should they take hybrid over five wood. I'll just say here's your two options. Five wood, center of gravity's back a little bit more, a little easier to launch in the air, a little larger head. For some people, that gives them more confidence versus other people look at the hybrid opposite, and smaller and say that's more confident. So it's just a difference in the trajectory, ease of use that way, and their ability to make contact. The five wood usually has a little longer shaft as well, and so it's 50-50. It's not one's better than the other. It's basically a decision based on a number of factors.
The reason why is the fit. You're 100% right. The gapping, whatever your proper gapping is, whatever you're comfortable with. So that's my short answer. My rant is on the marketing of a hybrid being like a wood. That seems silly to me to go down that road. For me, I know I have Callaway clubs in the bag. This is not me going at Callaway.
No.
For me, that's like saying this is the longest gap wedge money can buy. It seems silly to me. Hybrids, just like five wood. Well, yeah, just like five woods, they're a fitting club. You got to find the right gap. So to just say it's the longest hybrid, they don't. And that's the thing, as you said, it doesn't make it easier for some people. For some, it might. For some, that five wood might make more sense. I don't really like that, but yes. For the reason why you play it is it's got to make sense for you. Your swing comes into play. Maybe you just hit it better, and it might go 5 yards less, but confidence. So confidence, fit, that's pretty simple.
Yeah, I was writing about that wood this week, and I know I've had players in the past.
High wood?
What's that?
High wood?
High wood.
Woodbrid? What would you call it?
Whatever you like. It's, okay. It's a power hybrid, really. But I think there's some people that, you know, they go ahead and they hit their hybrid and they say, I hit this as well or better than a five wood. So, you know, for some people, they're going to find that as a fit in the bag. And I've seen people with three, four hybrids in the bag and no fairway woods. So it's not 100% unusual. it's available in three lofts anyways, and those are adjustable. So again, it still comes down to a fit. I just think maybe they're just marketing it more as a, you know, a distance club rather than a fit club as far as fitting a gap in a bag. So that's just it's your call. How's that?
I love it. All right. All right. What's the next in our mailbag?
All right. Someone said, how can I work on my ability to control speed on my long putt? So I assume you want me to handle this one as a PGA Canada professional.
Well, that would be smart, but we're going to switch it up. You can tell me what I'm what's wrong about it from me. I'm going to start with practice, eh? I think it's really hard. I think that is the toughest thing to explain how one person can be really good at it. A lot of it comes down to feel, and a lot of that feel comes back to practice. I think one of my the best thing I do on a golf course is on the green once I get there.
Right.
Sometimes can take longer than others. And a lot of that just comes back to a lot of practice. I remember when it sounds crazy, I couldn't afford coming out of university, spending every day buying golf balls from the range. I would just go and chip and putt and putt and putt and putt. So a lot of putting practice. I would, do some drills where I'd make sure, pulling it back a certain distance, making sure as far back as I go is as far through as I go is something I was kind of taught early on, and just keeping it smooth. And it's the biggest thing. The other thing that I was taught early is that it's a putting stroke. It's not a putting hit. And what I see from a lot of people when they got long putts, they're hitting the ball. Now, the ball is now taking off. Your putter has loft, as we talked about. My buddy Marcus's putter had 18 degrees. but your putter has loft, so the ball actually does come off the ground when you first make contact with it. You don't want to hit it. It's got to be a stroke. When you go to paint your wall, you don't hit the paintbrush on the wall and then stroke down nice and smooth, and a lot of practice from that.
A lot of good things in there. I mean, the three elements of putting that are super important are obviously, speed, line, and then the ability to read the putts. What I like to do for controlling speed for a lot of people is just to work on drills that are going to fine-tune your motor skills a little bit. A good way to do it for, this listener is to, set up maybe a 20-foot length on a putting green, set down tees that are, 5 feet apart, and work on a little bit of a ladder. They can work on getting a golf ball into one of those zones, and then work on maybe trying to get, you take a putt, let's say it's the 5 foot mark, you putt to the 5 foot mark, your next putt, you try to get it just a little bit past it, and those 5 foot areas, you try to get as many balls in as possible successively in distance to work it and fine tune it. And, you're going to have to do that on varying surfaces and greens when you get to a golf course to work on that as well. And I've seen some training aids related to that, some different long ropes with certain colored sections where you can work on fine tuning that in that way. But the best way obviously is to practice it, but you certainly, it's a skill that you can develop it. So just don't assume that you're either born with it or not with it. You can actually develop that skill.
I agree. I think the other thing, and maybe you'll disagree on this, I personally believe that the chance of you making that putt is so slim that people overread them, and they spend so much time on the read and they don't spend as much time on the speed. Is it up, down? I think pay way more attention to the speed, yet trust your first read. That's kind of my first thought with it. Yeah, do your full circle. You don't need to worry about that 4 feet right by the hole. I mean, the PGA Tour professionals might, but you do not need to do that. Focus on your speed. Oftentimes, you'll be at least closer to a section where you're going to make it if you just focus on the read. Forget about the speed, and now you got a 10-footer, which you probably aren't going to make that either.
Yeah, I agree with that. Speed, definitely important. I mean, it's very rare for a person to miss a putt, 6 feet right or 6 feet left, as you said, but it's very easy for them to miss it 6 feet short or 6 feet long. So, just work on that. Again, just work on it. I mean, it is a skill. You can develop it. Speed's definitely very important.
Yeah, go to your course if you're find that longest green and go from one end to the other, because sometimes the putting green's short. Do it late at night. It's all good. All right, what other questions were in the
this
bag?
This was an interesting one that came through, and I think it probably had a lot to do with the discussion in the last little while when Brooke Henderson won her ninth LPGA Tour win, and there was a number of outlets and different people that were tweeting about the fact that she was the winningest Canadian professional of all time, and that's not really the case. She's the winningest player on the LPGA Tour or the PGA Tour. And the question was, what Canadian pro has the most wins? And when you dig into it, obviously, you know, she surpassed the records of George Knutson, Mike Weir, and Sander Post, who had, you know, 8 wins respectively on PGA Tour and LPGA Tour. You dig into the, you know, other Canadian side, you look at Mo Norman, he's credited with about 55 professional wins, and that's not including maybe some of the smaller events. That's, you know, a lot of opens and things
also,
like that.
Also, for
well.
People that don't know Mo Norman, just go to YouTube. Google.
Yeah, you've got to go
type
watch
Mo Norman.
Yeah.
This guy is the most interesting man in the history of golf, I think. But continue.
Yeah, so obviously he had a lot of wins as well, but Bobby Breen, who's a Canadian who passed away 5 years ago, he's a club professional, he's credited with 164 professional wins, so that would be probably the one you'd have to look at for number of wins. Again, these are, you know, could be pro-am events, one-day events, two-day events. You know, he did win a number of larger events as well, but when you think about most wins, yeah, you know, he obviously passed away at 75. Brooke right now, just 22, so she's got a lot of time as well. She actually has 15 wins when you actually look at it. She has 9 in the LPGA Tour, but she has various other wins as well. So, but she's got lots of time to add to her total.
All right, next question in the mailbag here. See this one here saying, if you had to play a round of golf with there's 3 clubs and a putter, what would you choose and why? Now, 3 clubs plus the putter, correct?
I believe so. Yeah, that seems like it is what it is. So,
all
yeah.
right. Well, you were rambling for a bit. Probably need a little cup of water there. my 3 clubs, I'm going to go with a 3-wood. I need something off the tee, but also you can hit it in the fairway. So I'm going to grab a 3-wood. I'm going to grab a 7-iron. And I'm going to grab a lob wedge. And 7-iron, I think you can pump and run with it. You can de-loft it to make it closer to a 4, do some things with it. I'm probably going to miss a lot of greens and come up short. I can hit my lob wedge anything from, you know, a yard to, let's say, 110 if you really de-loft it, maybe 120. Yeah, I'm going with those.
Pretty good pick. I don't think I'd be too far off that. I might go with my sandwich over my lob wedge for me, just – versatility for what I can do.
I always use it around the green, probably because I'm dumb,
so
but
that's your choice. Yeah, but yeah, probably that as well. Irons, yeah, I hate to copy you, but yeah, I'm in there 7-iron as well. And you know, I was gonna take driver, but 3-wood, I think you're right, is the wise choice, because obviously if we get in a situation where it's a, you know, par 5 and, you know, you get to go for it, probably that 3-wood's a little bit more versatile. And I've got a little bit of a stronger 3-wood as well, so I can hit it a pretty good way. So I don't really need the extra few yards off the tee.
Makes sense. All right. What else we got in the mailbag here?
This one is a little odd. We'll go to the last one here first, and then I'll bring it back to this one. Someone said, well, they tweeted at me today, actually, when I put out the notice for the mailbag. They said, I thought at one time there was a continuous putting rule that required you to putt continuously until you hold out. You could only mark if you could stand on your, if you would stand on your putter's or partner's line. What happened to that rule, and why not implement this again to speed up play? So I researched it and looked into it, and I understood. I recall.
Well, you
being
mean
around.
Our people.
Our
we
people,
don't do
yes. our producers took care of that for you. But yeah, it was a rule previously. It was introduced as an optional local rule in 1966. It actually became an official rule in 68. But it was rescinded in 1970. Now, that being the case, it was only for single stroke play. And really, when it comes down to it, nothing says you can't do this with your own group if you want. I mean, if you want to just say, hey, guys, let's just putt out today. I mean, and really, I do anyways within my groups. I mean, I don't really think about that. I just go ahead and I putt. And, you know, if I'm going to be on someone's line, then, you know, I say, sorry, you know, I'm just going to mark. So I'm not on it. But otherwise, I just would putt out. The only way you couldn't do it is if it was match play. The opponent may recall your stroke. So I don't really see, you know, even though it's not an official rule, I don't see why you couldn't do it. Or, you know, a lot of people probably do it anyways.
I got nothing to add there.
Yeah, nothing
I don't
on that
know.
One.
If you want to do that, do it.
Yeah.
I think it's a cool idea.
I'm going to guess it was an older listener, maybe, based on this, the fact that, you know, they were playing golf at that time when the rule was around. Maybe they just, you know, didn't bother looking it up or seeing that. But
Maybe they forgot the rule after they took that club to the face.
Maybe it could have been them as well. So, all right, we got one last one here. What golf club have you had in your golf bag the longest? So that's asking it of us. Mm-hmm. What bag have you had it in the longest?
I think that the answer currently is my 3-wood. I've had that 3-wood for, when did the X2 Hot from Callaway come out?
Oh, boy.
Let's say 2015.
Yeah.
2014. Maybe 14. 14. Maybe good that. Year. Yeah. Fitter of the year that year. I don't know if you remember that. Yeah, so I got that in there. I just haven't been able to find one that I'm more comfortable with hitting. I think the putter, though, is actually longer. It just goes back and forth because it's a Scotty Cameron Newport 2. You know, it's comes and goes. I have that and a Spider right now that are just very different. And if one's not working, I go back and forth. So in the bag right now is the 3-wood. I'm of the belief that 3-woods really don't change that often. Find one you love, like Henrik Stenson, and RIP to his 3-wood. Find one you love, like Henrik Stenson and Stenson, and stick with it. But other than that, the putters are usually ones that stick around for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. Putters usually do. Mine, not so much. I think I'm at 3 years now with the one I've got in my bag. Hybrid for me. I've got a Titleist 816 H1 hybrid that's been in the bag.
You also have a wooden club that you carry in the bag, though, a lot.
Well, I've had that in the bag. I don't carry that regularly. I do have some hickories that I play around with, but I'd say it's a hybrid that I've had in my bag for maybe 4 years now, which is kind of odd. Actually, I had a hybrid, I think, before that was probably in the bag for 7 or 8 years. I've been known to have drivers in there for 6 or 7 or 2. I mean, everybody assumes automatically that you're a golf professional or that you're in the golf industry and have access to equipment, that, you know, you're obviously going to be changing your golf bag every, you know, minute. But, you know, although you have the option, it's not necessarily the case that you actually take it and make those changes.
Yeah, there's a couple things that I almost change every single year. Like wedges, or depending how much I'm playing, I'm probably changing every single year, especially if I'm practicing. My lob wedge is, you know, as I heard, I'm going to carry it. It's probably a club that, you know, gets used the most. I probably need to replace it every single year. I don't need to, but I like to. If I only have half an hour to go practice, I'll just grab, you know, the lob wedge and throw it in the back of the truck and hop on over there and let's go chip for a bit. So those wedges don't stay long. Irons, you know, their irons, new ones come out and I get a little itch. But I agree with you. The hybrid makes sense. The fairway would make sense. I think people launch way too quickly into a new driver. I've been one of them. They don't change that much from year to year. The fitting might feel that way. There's a lot that goes into that. If it's drastic, go and do it. But, you know, find something you're comfortable with, just like the fairway wood and the hybrid, and stick with it. That's the mailbag for the week. We're going to wrap things up here. What have we got going on this weekend? We got the Zozo this weekend, right?
Yeah,
so Tiger Woods playing a full no-cut event. Where do you have him finishing this week? I think the odds, well, you had it there, 75%. I'm lost. I'm already lost. Give it to me.
I put a poll out basically asking if people thought, you know, Tiger would finish in the top 10. And, you know, basically 45% said yes and 55% no. Only 78 players in the field. So we'll see how that plays out.
Not looking good right now. Plus 3 through 3 holes as we got Golf Central down in the studio popping up. So tough start for Tiger, but who cares? He's making money regardless. All right, let's give the listeners a tip of the week. You've been great so far. That balancing one, I'm still focused.
Still working on that
still
one?
Thinking of the balance. It's really helped me, especially when I get toey, making sure I'm not too far on my heels. And probably if you're getting heely, you're a little too far on your toes, right? You know, balance it up.
Exactly.
So what do you got this week?
Well, we already talked a little bit about speed control, so we could have left it at that. One thing that I worked on recently with my daughter, and I don't get too complicated with it, but it was just we talked a lot about wrist angles. And now when I say that, a lot of people, you know, their eyes will glaze over like yours are right now, but you just have to understand that wrists move in 6 different ways, and I'm not going to get into the physiology of that, but every one of those motions really affects the club face angle, loft of the club, and there's not a right wrist angles. There's a right wrist angles for you. Everything that you're doing has to match what you're doing in your golf swing to get the impact conditions that you want to get the results. So really the tip is the fact that, you know, the wrist angles are important. They can help or hurt you at any time. The golf swing goes very quickly. We don't want to be in a situation where we're having to make a lot of compensations during that motion, during that downswing time, which can, you know, sometimes only be a quarter second. So basically what I'm encouraging people to do is that to learn more about it, go and work with a coach and find out what works for you, why it matches up to what you do in your golf swing. If you have a better understanding of that, chances are you're going to be able to start the golf ball where you need to.
Yeah, great hands can save a lot of shots, but they're not a way to build your golf swing around.
Not one bit.
When I recently – oh, and Tiger just birdied. He's back to 2 over, folks. We're doing live coverage. We're going to be here all week. When I went up and got fit for my driver at the TaylorMade facility up in Markham – or sorry, not Markham.
Vaughn.
Up in Vaughn there. Thanks again to those guys up there for having me up there. But they put my swing up beside Rory McIlroy's swing. And the only stat that was like identical between us that we were both really good at was just the hands at impact, and that we pretty much had the exact same numbers. So I probably get away with having good hands that allows me to somehow do things. But if I actually went to a teacher more often and worked on these wrist angles, I wouldn't have to rely on good timing and good hands. Because, as you know, if your timing's off on, you know, your first couple swings, you're probably going to have bad timing all day. So that's another great tip and, you know, good marketing. Go see Scotty. You can find him on Instagram. He would love to add you into his bag of players that he's currently teaching right now. That is our episode for the week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. One last reminder, if you do have any money that you can donate to the Jenkins family on GoFundMe, please find that on GoFundMe. It would be appreciated for them. I hope you enjoy the Zozo Championship. I just really hope for one more good weekend of fall golf in this area. And then it's going to be a little bit of a break before we have to travel south for the winter. All right, folks, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Just yesterday, got into slow motion in the daylight. Today, my boat's lost in